I'm going to pray in the moment. I come in here a little bit preoccupied. I just, there's a horror kind of marathon happening next weekend, and I just saw a poster coming in here of a movie called Velocipastor. That's like, and I just could not stop going down the rabbit hole of my mind of what Velocipastor was about. So I think I'm going to pray to help get myself into a good space this morning. Before I pray, though, I'm going to just want to, we're really thankful. Yesterday, some of us were, you may have been here. We had our Easter egg and Easter bunny event that we partnered with the Davis with. We had like over 250 people come through here and participate in an Easter egg hunt and meet the Easter bunny. And we wanted to give a special thank you to Ben Prudek and Hope and Willie Modueno and Vince and Kezia, several people that really made that happen. Really thankful for all of that work. It really honestly wouldn't have been possible, but it was really fun. I had a good time. So I'm going to pray again, and feel free to join me in your own mind. Jesus, I ask for help right now, kind of calming my heart, opening myself up. I pray that as I speak, that my words would have you guiding them. And so in any ways that like my human imperfection and my human bias and brokenness comes out, that you would somehow like still work through that. And then I pray for all of us here as we sit through this next period of time together, as we sit here on Easter morning, that our hearts would feel connected with you, connected with each other, connected with a larger story that we're a part of. And I just take all of the spinning to-do lists in my brain, all of the anxieties that I carry into the space, all of my distractions, and I just take a deep breath. And I ask for help in this next hour to get out of this what is on the table for me. I'm just thankful that you care for me and you care for my experience here in a way that you desire to stretch and grow and heal and work within me. I just ask for help to get myself in a position to do that. Amen. Well, happy Easter, everybody. This is, as Vince mentioned, the kind of most celebratory day of the year. And I come in here on a nice week. I got Friday off for Good Friday. I don't know if anybody else exists within kind of public school system work, but that was a nice little perk that I always forget that I get Good Friday off. And then I got Good Friday off. And so what I got Good Friday off from is I actually, in addition to this church here, I work for an organization called Books and Breakfast. It's a before school program in Evanston that's all about advancing educational equity through a morning meal, as you guessed, through breakfast, is there, through academic support, social, emotional support. Maybe the best way to say is when a kid comes into our room, we want them to leave that, go into their school day with a full belly, with whatever work they had completed, not because we care that work is completed, but we want kids to feel actually like they can show up ready for the day and feeling a sense of like cared for, that somebody in that building cares for who they are. And for a million reasons, I find the work I do with Books and Breakfast humbling. I find it challenging. But in particular, seeing the way that race and economics like tangibly affects the kinds of opportunity the kids we work with every day have, the kind of opportunities they have to succeed. Sometimes when I see that, it feels overwhelming to me. It's a pretty big part of what we do. And recently, I've actually had a few experiences that have brought me back to memories of my own childhood. You're working with elementary school students. It's not a surprise that you would then think of your own experience. But there's a few things that have like kind of poignantly stuck into my own experience. So I actually grew up in Evanston, too. I went through the same school system that I now work in. And over the last month or so, I've had a handful of experiences where a student will come to me distraught, upset. And, you know, we're checking in and like, hey, what's going on? And what they reflect back is some version of, like, I feel like the adults aren't listening to me. Like, I'm trying to tell them about something. I'm trying to say something, but they're not listening to me. And honestly, it's not particularly surprising that a child would complain of an adult not listening to them. I think partly in large part to the fact that adults don't tend to listen to them. But in these situations, as I started to dig in deeper and like ask what was going on, trying to figure out why kids that are kind of emotional and distraught that are not normally the kinds of kids that are emotional and distraught, trying to figure out what's going on in that, something kind of came out of it. I started to notice certain trends, certain things that were popping up in more than just like offhand stories. It's where time and time again, they would talk about how their experience, and almost all of our students are students of color, would talk about how they had an incident, or they were caught honestly doing something they shouldn't be doing, but they would be with another student who was white. And they would express to me that consistently to them, they experienced that they got in trouble, that they were the ones sent to the office, had their parents called, whereas the white students seemed to, in their eyes, escape without any real repercussions. Now, the reason I say this is because hearing these stories brought up emotion within me about myself. It brought up memories of me growing up in Evanston. And I would sit there and I would hear them and I would try to listen to what's going on with them and, you know, trying to understand the truth of a situation when a seven-year-old is telling you is always a difficult thing. But for some reason, I felt able to just be present and empathize and hear them and communicate, yeah, would you like me to go talk with a teacher? Would you like me to go and be another adult in the situation that is hearing you? And the reason I thought about this, the reason why these stuck out to me is because it made me think of myself. And the dozens and dozens and dozens of times that I got in trouble alongside my friends who were not white. And I was able to get out of them. And the way that I tended to get out of it was figuring out how to let the other person take the brunt of the repercussions. I got into several fights growing up, but I was never suspended. I was into the principal's office on a very regular basis. It was a very frequent, so I'm not somebody that sits still well. I don't love rules. I like to talk. I have energy, all things that don't go well with like a second grade classroom. And so, in this situation, I would go to the principal's office a ton, but the truth was that I would not actually, in those moments, actually I remember in my entire experience, only having my parents called three times. That like for me, the white boy, the best case scenario was always entertained. Kyle's a good kid. We believe in him. And that was what I heard all the time is even though I was in trouble or even though I was struggling in class, the narrative was still, this is a counterexample to who we know you really are. But for me, the people that I was getting in trouble with, my friends that were not white, it seemed that these same kind of things were not being entertained in the same way. Often I would hear the most common term would be like a troublemaker, like that kid's a real problem. And so recently, as I'm hearing these stories, and there's always a lot of nuance and context to stories, but what was going on internally for me was remembering all the times where I was aware that I could spin the situation so my friend would get in trouble and not me. And so what happened is I was processing this with my boss. I was just talking through kind of some of the like weight, guilt, shame, whatever feeling, if you look back on an early version of yourself and you're like, I think that was kind of an ugly thing I did. And, you know, what she said to me, it felt deeply consoling. It felt helpful. It felt, I don't know, there was something in it that felt like what I needed. And she said to me, you know, I think there's something deeply redemptive about you advocating for your students today. You're able to advocate for those kids because you lived on the other side. You're able to say, like, I hear you and I believe you because I used to be the other kid that got away with it. And like, I just think there's something deeply redemptive in that, that you're experiencing that today. And hearing her say that, the kind of shame and regret that I felt, it just felt like less of a weight on me. I feel like I've experienced a lot of healing from the person I used to be, but there was something in this more than just healing. I was actually experiencing something that I would say was redemptive. You know, it doesn't make up for everything I've ever done. You know, what I do today has almost no effect on the people that I left holding the bag when I was 8 years old. But there was something powerful in me taking kind of the broken and hurt, like the shame-filled parts of who I was. And not just finding healing in it, but getting to like live out some redemptive good. Like I got to use those ugly parts, those hurt and broken parts, and now do something good with it. And this is the story of redemption for me, and it feels very appropriate to talk about today on Easter. Easter all about redemption, as we celebrate Jesus' resurrection after his death on Good Friday. You know, today we get to celebrate that Jesus is the God of redemption, that after death comes life. I mean, the truth is, like, don't we all love a good redemption story? I feel like there's, like, one thing that Americans wholeheartedly love. It is a story of redemption. Like, this last week, I don't know if you caught it last Sunday, but Tiger Woods won the Masters again. Oh, my God, it's a great. Everything I was reading was just, like, overwhelmingly positive. Like, there was, like, no counterpoint. And in our current culture, to find a story that everybody agrees on is just a rare thing. So I was looking at it, and there was, like, all these pictures of him, you know, like, celebrating with his kids afterwards. It was just, like, this beautiful picture of redemption, which is also kind of funny because maybe secondary to redemption, Americans love outrage, and, like, it's the same audience that, like, universally celebrated this today was the same audience of us, like, 10 years ago that were universally condemning Tiger. But the thing is, I think there's something in our culture. There is maybe the dark side of our culture is revealed in the way that we love to publicly disapprove of people. But if you give it a little bit of time, I think there's something genuinely good in our hearts that's revealed, that redemption is where we really want things to be at. None of us really wants to be cynical. None of us choose outrage or disapproval as kind of like our resting default state. Life can weigh us down in such a way that that's where we end up. But I think the deepest truth within us, that we just love to see a picture of redemption. And I think there's just something in us that loves the power of redemption. There's something about, like, the getting up after a fall, the winning after losing. Like, I'm thinking even not, to, you know, Tiger Woods is an example, but I was even thinking about, like, Virginia winning the NCAA championship after being the first team ever to lose as a 1 seed to a 16 seed. There's just, like, something poetic that, like, resonates with us of the what winning means after losing. And I think there's the reason maybe that we like stories of redemption so much is because it speaks of hope. Hope that in our hard times, in our suffering, in our losses, that we too might experience redemption later. Those stories make us feel like when our life is falling apart, there can be a bounce back. And I think that that is what Jesus is all about. And I think that's what today is all about. Easter, the hope and healing and power of redemption. And so with that, I want to read the traditional Easter passage from Luke 24. On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, the women took the spices they had prepared and went to the tomb. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb. But when they entered, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus. While they were wandering about this, suddenly two men in clothes that had gleamed like lightning stood before them. In their fright, the women bowed down with their faces to the ground. But the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here. He is risen. Remember how he told you while he was still with you in Galilee, 'The Son of Man must be delivered over to the hand of sinners, be crucified, and on the third day raised again.'" After being abandoned, after being forsaken, being betrayed and killed, Jesus is resurrected. The Apostle Peter wrote, through Jesus' resurrection, we have been given a living hope of new life. Today, we talk about Jesus' resurrection, not just because of Jesus' resurrection, but because of what it means for us. That we get to experience resurrection, that we get to experience redemption. And more so than most, Peter, who wrote those words, knows this. We know of his own story as a testament to this. As Jesus was being crucified, Peter rejected and disowned him. But then there's an incredible moment after Jesus is resurrected where Jesus comes to Peter. And he doesn't shun him. He doesn't shame him. He doesn't demand retribution. He speaks to him gently. He redeems him. And then makes him what's called the cornerstone onto which he will build his church. And after this, Peter becomes a bold advocate for the poor and the unjustly treated of his day. And he becomes a humble and mature man, able to receive correction from others. And a courageous defender of the way of love for neighbors that Jesus taught, to the point that he himself died for it. He lived an incredible life born out of an experience of redemption. And I think the truth is, Jesus comes alive in those moments in our life. In the face of our hurts, in the face of our suffering, in the face of our mistakes. I think what Jesus offers is more than just healing, more than just forgiveness. I believe he's offering redemption. Taking those lows, taking those heartaches, taking those injustices and transforming them. And using them to bring what I call redemptive good into the world. Good born out of the lows. In my own life, the biggest picture of this has always been my brother. I've always had that smile. I don't know why. But it's my older brother, my middle brother. I'm the youngest. You know, when he was just over a year old, he contracted meningitis and almost died. And the doctor said that if he survived, that he would have significant mental delays. And almost certainly he would never walk again. And then they had discovered after some time that the illness had left him without his hearing, that he was deaf. You know, thankfully those first two pronouncements never came to be, but he did live the rest of his life and continues to live his life without hearing. And this happened before I was born. He's 3 years older than me, and this happened when he was just over one. So my brother has always been deaf to me. And the truth is, growing up with him, I have learned a ton being his brother. I've learned how the richness of our life is not as tied to how functional our body or how functional we think everything about us is. But also, sadly, I've seen through the way that he's experienced people that often, in an effort to help others, we so often in life end up belittling people and trying to rob them, perhaps unintentionally, of dignity. But mostly here, though, what I want to say here today is how unbelievably proud of my brother I am. You know, he has something in him that I just don't think I have. This is one of those things that I think, I don't know, we could say genetics, I guess, although we kind of share genetics, so that's kind of a hard one on me that I don't have this. But so when I played like football in high school and my coach would yell at me, it would make me feel terrible and then I would play worse. Like I'm not a yell at me and turn that into anything but like making me feel bad kind of person. But my brother, every bit of doubt, every bit of condescension, every bit of adversity that he faced, he turned to fuel. You know, today, this is a couple years ago, my brother not only was able to make it through high school and college, which is a considerably lower rate for deaf students, but has graduated college and has actually, he has his MBA, and he's a department head at the Department of Defense now. In fact, he's the highest ranking deaf person ever in the DOD. And something you may or may not know, Indianapolis, where he lives and works, is one of the largest hubs of deaf community in America. And so my brother's actually received several special accommodations for something that he started doing a few years back, which he started holding classes at lunchtime to teach other managers sign language so that they would be better able to communicate and more likely to hire deaf employees. You know, and I think that Jesus, I like to imagine that Jesus like hangs out with him in those lunch classes, that lives with him as he's walking out what I think is a profound picture of redemption. Not only showing that he's made something of himself, but using his position and opportunity for other people who have faced similar challenges as him. You know, that story feels very personal to me, obviously. But I think we can all think of stories of redemption that we know, where the very thing that felt like the worst part of life is then used to create good. I was just recently reading an article about a woman who went through significant abuse and trauma as a child, but as an adult has become a trauma counselor to help others walk through what she went through. And her common experience enables her to do that in ways that somebody who didn't walk through it would struggle to. And this is what I call the redemptive good. This is where I think the God Jesus shows us feels most alive. That in taking our hurt and pain and suffering and our brokenness, and then out of that place bringing good into the world, that through that we actually begin to rob some of the power that those things have over us. You know, in a minute, this is what I want to pray for. I want to pray for what does it look like for the hard parts of us to find some sort of redemptive good. But before I do that, there's something that feels important to me. It's something that I think at times can provoke real anger within me. You know, I think the reason why it so profoundly offends me is because it's something that I heard said by religious people while I was growing up with my brother. And it's some version of God made or God allowed or God permitted my brother to become deaf so that he could work through his deafness to help other deaf people later in life. That there's some kind of like long con to what's happening here. You know, I think of that trauma counselor that I was reading that article about, and I think about what this says to her, that somehow God orchestrated or gave like a thumbs up to her abuse and trauma so he could redeem it later. And I'll say very few things make my blood boil more than the insinuation that God would do that. You know, I once watched a video, an interview with Stephen Fry. He's a British comedian. And he was talking about, and he was explaining this thing, this very thing, as why he just can't believe in God, the God that he was taught about as a kid. And that if that God did exist, and he did believe in him, that he certainly wouldn't follow him. And I have to say, that part of it, it resonates with me. If God does work this way, making children deaf, permitting abuse, just so that he can redeem it later to like tell a good story, like nothing about that makes me want to follow that God. Thankfully, though, that is not the God I have experienced. I don't think that's the God Jesus shows us. The message of redemption is not a long con. God did not leave my friends of color left holding the bag so that now today I get to tell a redemptive story of trying to fight against that kind of system. God did not take my brother's hearing so that today he could help other deaf people. God did not have that counselor experience abuse so that she could help other survivors. I think there's just so many logical flaws in that way of thinking. But regardless of the logic of it, the offense to my soul feels great. More than I feel like I can bear. And that's why I'm so thankful that I don't believe that that's who Jesus is. the Easter message of redemption, that through death comes new life, is not a message of a manipulative God who has the agency in our suffering so that he could turn it around later. No, the message of redemption is that these evil and broken not of his will things, the terrible parts of this world that he actively works against, the broken parts of humanity, the evil that we experience, that in those things he is not only able to bring healing, but he is able to take those and turn them into redemptive good. And this is the power of redemptive good. It is not giving affirmation to the bad that happened and somehow saying, well, that was actually good. It is saying that bad happened and it was bad. But Jesus is good enough that he can still bring good into the world out of that. And to me, when I am wrestling with the realities of who I was when I was younger, to be able to turn around and do something that feels like directly a result of the evil I did, it not only brings healing, but it feels like it takes the weight. It breaks some of that evil within me. You know, I think about like being a pastor here, actually. I have not, if you've been with us ever, you've probably heard me reference something about a growing up with some religious frameworks for me that really hurt me. Some frameworks for me that left me very unsure about the tenability of following God. But I look at what I do today, and it is born out of that place. And each time I get to stand up here and say, if you've been fed a message that God had agency in that horrific thing that happened to you, so that there's a good story at the end, that's not true. Each time I get to say that, it brings more than just healing to the own hurt I experienced. That there's like a redemptive good that kind of creates new life within me. And so in a moment, I want to pray with us. I want to pray a few things. I want to pray first for the hope that redemption promises. I think the reason we resonate with Tiger Woods, the reason we resonate with these stories of redemption is the hope that when you are feeling at your low, that there is a story of redemption for yourself. And I believe that Jesus wants that hope to be alive within you. But I also think that there's a truth that sometimes that redemption isn't seen in this life. Sometimes that isn't seen to fruition. But the company that Jesus has there with you, the promise of an ultimate redemption, I think is deeply meaningful, particularly if we are in the place of suffering, a place of challenge. Or maybe there's a suffering, a trauma, a challenge of the past that has just never been addressed or never fully dealt with. And so I want to pray for that. I want to pray that you feel healing and feel the hope of redemption. And then secondly, I want to pray for anybody who, particularly in a religious environment, has had something communicated around the lines of that terrible thing that happened to you was actually God doing some big, long plan. I think I want to pray from a position as like being a pastor and somehow representing pictures of faith, I want to pray like a deep ask of forgiveness, like a sincere sorry for what was said to you, but also a prayer of healing and restoration for what your image of God might be. And so to that end, I just invite you to stand with me and I'm going to pray. Jesus, today we recognize that Though there was death on Friday, this morning we find new life. And as Peter says, through your resurrection, we find a hope for new life in ourselves. That you are alive and working with us to bring healing where there has hurt, to bring restoration where there has been brokenness. And if anybody here is just aware of some wrong, some evil, some brokenness, some suffering, something that just feels like, what was the point of this other than pain? I pray, God, that you would bring redemption to that. Not in a lie that says that bad thing is actually good, but we would feel the truth that you are so good that even those terrible things, even those moments of death, would feel a promise of new life, that we could see how you can work through those to bring redemptive good into this world. And if any of us have pictures in our mind of redemption that actually feel a little bit more like a long con when it comes to God, or if anybody's had words spoken over them that somehow gave permission or affirmation to terrible things that you have walked through, I say, I'm very sorry. Jesus, I ask for healing right now. And I ask for a sense of redemption in that. That where we go from that place of hurt is more than just a place of forgiveness or healing, but somehow it would activate some kind of good into the world. That we'd be more readily able to resonate with the experience of others. More easily brought to a place of empathy. More able to recognize where you exist in our life. Not as distant judge, but like intimate participant who walked through those things with us and grieved with us. And so on Easter morning, I say thank you, Jesus, and I praise the truth of the resurrection, that there is hope for new life